The next case is 96-1209, Ronald Amy versus Bay Cliffs Corporation. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge John Reese, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 9th District. Welcome, Judge Reese.
Thank you, Justice.
Mr. Smith.
Accept all that to be so, including your presentation with regard to res judicata. Doesn't, for the to be negated here, doesn't there have to be some damage, and haven't you failed to show any damage to these parties?
Your Honor, no, we believe the record supports damage. In fact, Judge McQuay, the trial court examined the issue because we bring under 519 as neighboring property owners. We can only bring this action if we are especially damaged by this commercial.
You can see that the statute says you must show damage.
Absolutely.
Okay, now, where in the record am I going to find that there was damage to any of these individuals who are listed as appellants?
The record reflects affidavit damage, real estate,
I can see that affidavit is there by the registered appraiser, but it was omnibus in nature, was it not? It was not specific.
It was specific enough to establish that under 519.24, the special damage, that their property would not, for instance, increase in value, because absolutely the statute requires that. And shown in the record, as Judge recognized.
Judge Resnick, the Court of Appeals didn't find any, did he?
The Court of Appeals didn't go to that issue. I don't believe Judge Resnick disputed the damage evidence.
You think they just did it on res judicata?
The Court of Appeals just did a res judicata analysis. And did it, importantly, both on the claim conclusion as well as issue conclusion. And of course, what we told this court, what this court decided to draw, we believe is being dangerously expanded by this decision. And I even refer to the proposition of law one of the appellee. This court in Bravo made a broad statement for all claims arising out of the same transaction, but this court in Bravo did not get away from the privity requirement. parties being present. Indeed, the statement at 24 that this court adopted in Grava specifically states that different parties having claims from the same transaction, those are separate claims for purposes of merger and bar. Remember, unlike Mr. Grava, who brought his claim twice before the administrative board, these property owners were not party to that prior action. And so, under a Grava analysis and restatement analysis, these are separate claims, even if they arise out of the same transaction. Of course, our argument is that these claims do not even arise out of the same transaction. And they don't because you must examine the nature of that underlying Bakeless 1 and 2, as we have referred to it. The nature of that underlying initial administrative proceeding. That proceeding was administrative and resulted, it was a revocation by those trustees of the permit. The developer, Bakeless, appealed 2506. 2506 jurisdiction is very limited. The trial court is acting as an appellate court to determine only whether that administrative action should be vacated, modified, affirmed, or reversed. That's all Judge Franklin did.
Given all the legal niceties of race judicata, the administrative appeals, and all of that, the thing that I'm wrestling most with in this case, I think, is they had a valid zoning permit. In city council, we used to go through this all the time. People come in and say, here, we got this valid zoning permit. Now you're trying to take it away from us. We have detrimental reliance. These people had a valid zoning permit, in effect relied upon it, and now, in the third or fourth, or maybe the 11th hour, it's decided that maybe they ought not to have it. How is that even equitable?
Because this case, for the first time, not for the first time, attempts to determine the use. That is a commercial use and a residential. The validity of the permit, which was only determined because the trustees did not have the jurisdiction to revoke it. Judge Franklin very clearly said the trustee's action was void, therefore the permit stands. No determination was made, this is the issue conclusion analysis, no determination was made that the use was ever permitted, a marina use in the middle of the residential neighborhood.
Could it have been determined in that action? Could it have been determined?
It could not have been determined. It was
impossible.
Impossible because Judge Franklin was only looking at the jurisdiction of the trustees to revoke. And he said that you can only revoke when the inspector issues a zoning permit based upon a false statement. And that's what Bakeless 2 dealt with. The allegation when they tried twice, they revoked the second time. They claimed that when Bakeless asserted to be the owner of the property, when in fact, as submerged land, Bakeless was only the lessee of the property under submerged land, that was a material false statement. Bakeless 2 decided that was not a material false statement. The reason, the motivation, as you can direct me to the briefs that have been filed in the prior court, or the reason was irrelevant to Judge Franklin. Whether they had the right reason or the wrong reason, the only thing Judge Franklin needed to look at was whether they had the authority, whether there was a false statement in that application, because that's the only jurisdiction, the only basis upon which those trustees could properly revoke. So no, it couldn't have been decided, and as our issue analysis makes clear, I hope, it was actually not decided. So Quaid looked at the title of the trial, but looked at the entire record of 1 and 2, and determined that the issue had never been decided as to the use. And the Court of Appeals disagreed. They imposed their own interpretation using Black's Law Dictionary as a basis. But the standard for for the Court of Appeal should have been abuse of discretion as to a trial looking back to construe its own prior judgment and prior decision.
Mr. Smith.
It seems to me that you're making the argument here that there's a distinction here that the property owners are seeking to enforce their property rights, as opposed to the actions of Bay Cliff 1 and 2 of the township, that's therefore supports the concept that these actions don't arise out of a common nucleus of fact. But my question is, in Bay Cliffs 1 and 2, and in this action by the owners, isn't the subject entirely enforcing the R3 zoning or not? In each of those cases?
No, because just remember, the subject of Bay Cliffs 1 and 2 were those trustees properly revoking the permits.
I know that argument. I recognize that, but isn't the subject of whether or not RC zoning is appropriate a subset of that, or maybe the major issue of the papers 1 and 2 about the procedure, about it being improperly revoked?
No, it's not, and that's exactly why McQuaid went back to see if it was, and he decided it wasn't. And why we stress so much the different nature of the action. A different set of operative facts are necessary. What we need to show in this case is that there's scam, that there's a neighbor, and that there's a commercial use in a residential area. But what those trustees had to show, they didn't have to show that. They were defending their revocation. And what?
But why? The basis for defending the revocation was that R3 just doesn't fit for marinas.
The marine, and that may have been their motivation. And it's clear they could have brought a 519-24 action. But that was not the subject. That was not essential for Franklin to decide that. In the Bakers 1 and 2, and remember, that was the reason, the motivation, but that was not the issue. That was not the claim.
Isn't that the import of Gravel v. Parker, though, is that all these things should be brought? I'm trying to think of how the procedurally could have been, that these owners could have protected themselves in 1 or 2.
But remember, in 1 or 2, these owners are not a party. They're not supposed to be party because it's the Bakers. It's the person aggrieved by an administrative act that brings that appeal under 2506. These properties are not part of that.
Zoning is to be enacted. Of course, zoning boards and townships are acting at the behest of the citizens and the taxpayers. I mean, they're protecting the zoning. That's the whole.
That's the whole structure. It's clear that these trustees in revoking were wrong. They were wrong. And what is when you get to the principle of fairness, why not have re-raised it's to be fair, and it's to guarantee a party at least one chance to present their case. Those are the principles in this court has said many times, under live race judicata, these property owners did not get their chance. They were never in court one time. Again, it was only the trustees defending their initial action. That was the background of reason. But these property owners, by the special statutory right, again, they have special statutory right. There's condos all over Danbury Township. And if you affirm this decision, you'll have, if the neighbor wants to turn his house into a 24-hour carry-out bookstore, and the trustees revoke that permit for whatever reason, and they were wrong for doing it because it wasn't a false statement on the application, you have these property owners, and again, this is why it applies to everybody.
So every citizen, I mean, this is... And now we sit in, every citizen can't come in and bring their own action, and the adult bookstore is permitted in their neighborhood and every, you know, can they?
No, absolutely. I'm a property owner. Excuse me, I'm a property owner.
That's the legislature given that, right?
I'm not a neighbor, especially, and we're not talking about trustees acting for everyone. They may have some context for everybody to enforce them, but these seven property owners have special statute in their way.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Brown.
Thank you, John. May it please the court. My name is John Brown, Kelvin Camp Livingstone. With me is Robert Prince, also Kelvin Camp Livingstone. The basic system of adjudicating zoning issues in Ohio will become unworkable. Race judicata is not applied to prevent endless lawsuits and fractious parties against prior adjudications. This court knows there are two types of race judicata, claim preclusion and issue preclusion. The precise issue, which you also must find along with either claim or issue preclusion, is identity or mutuality of parties. This court has already addressed the issue of mutuality of parties in the case of Johnson's Island, Inc. Johnson's Island, Inc. Johnson's Island, Inc. versus Danbury Township Board of Trustees, 1982 Supreme Court case. That case involved the same island. It involved the same parties. The court in that case found it was claim preclusion because we were dealing with those two cases that underlie that case dealt with facts. And in that case, this court found mutuality indeed between the Danbury Township Board of Trustees, which are also entering into the case, and Johnson Island Property Association. The same corporation is formerly known as Johnson's Island Club, but it's part of those cases.
Is this case distinguishable in the 519.24 provide a private cause of action for citizens, or does it just set forth citizens, particular citizens who can have standing to bring the action if the government entities do not?
Thank you, Your Honor. I will tie us back up to Johnson's Island in case the site I just mentioned. 519.4 of the Ohio Revised Code names four entities that have the right to bring an action to enjoin an alleged zoning violation. The county prosecutor, the township trustees, the zoning inspector, or an adjoining landowner that's especially damaged. But they all have the same right. They do not have individual rights. They all coalesce under the same right, under the same statute. They have a right to bring an injunction against an alleged zoning violation.
What's your best authority for saying that? That these are a joint, that they have a joint right, not an individual?
Well, Your Honor, in first instance, I would point to the statute. The structure of the statute under 519 is there's one right, and there are four parties listed with commas separating them as to those that can bring that right. I would argue that the state legislature intended that clearly. Any one of those can bring the same right. My same argument on that point is that all of those four parties indeed share the same right. The right that Chippewa, the appellants in this case claim then, is shared with the public. Those other three entities, prosecutor, trustees, the zoning inspector, are all members of the public. Now, if I might tie back to the Johnson's Island analysis I was making, the Johnson's Island Inc. analysis that I was making is that in that case, this court analyzed a sister law. 519.4, of course, does not exist within the Danbury Township zoning resolution. However, it has a sister provision. It has section 1206.2 also gives standing in that case to three individuals to bring, and the wording is virtually the same, to bring an action to enjoin a zoning violation. In analyzing that particular statute in the Johnson's Island case, this court said, discussing that very policy issue, the estoppel effect of the judgment operates mutually. If the person taking advantage of the judgment would have been bound if the result had been the opposite. Close quote. So the court ruled mutuality in the Johnson's Island case in 1982, and it ruled mutuality as to Danbury Township trustees and Johnson Island property, which is the appellant here, of course, by their former name. That mutuality concept has also been articulated by this court in two other cases, since Cincinnati, Crotty versus Cincinnati, and Stromberg versus Board of Education. In those cases, this court said, quote, judgment for or against the governing body is binding and conclusive in res judicata from residents, citizens, and taxpayers with respect to matters adjudicated, which are of general and public interest. There also is a Sixth Circuit case, City of Canton versus Maynard, which also affirms that same principle of mutuality, where, as here, the appellants are residents, taxpayers, come with the dignity of that particular government body. Yes.
I'm trying to understand the value at all of 50 or 51924. Under that theory, how does a property owner who is especially affected get any use at all of the statute? Under your theory?
My theory is that the only way that one is precluded from using 51924 is if there has been a prior adjudication such that res judicata would apply to preclude subsequent action under 51924.
Okay, so
I find
so here the township is taking a position that is one and the same as the view of the property owners. Correct.
No, Your Honor, yes, and on
so there's no reason prior to the township undertaking this, well, actually, until your client undertakes to get the permit, there's no reason to do anything. So they start this process, and the township saying, no, we think it's a non-conforming use. So there isn't any reason for a landowner nearby to do anything.
That is correct.
Okay. But under your theory, they would need to be in there some amicus basis, or can they get joined? Can they join their rights under the statute, their cause of action?
Your Honor, in the first instance, they can intervene at any given time, which they did not. My argument is this, though, because I am really not arguing any type of exhaustion of remedies argument. The statute says, the statute itself says that these four parties, 519.4, prosecutor, trustee, zoning inspector, or especially damaged adjoining landowner, can bring this action in addition to other remedies provided by law. They have a right to elect to bring any one of several remedies.
Yeah, but did any of them do that in this case? Your clients brought this action against the Board of Trustees, saying you did not have the authority to revoke this permit. So none of the parties mentioned in that statute brought this Bay 1, Bay Cliff 1 or 2 action. It is your clients who brought it. Now, assuming that's true, how would these people get in your action? Because your client brought it. You said, Board of Trustees, you have no authority to revoke this under the zoning resolution. It should have gone to the Board of Zoning Appeal.
I'm sorry.
Now, how do these people, these property owners, get in that action?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I've been part of this super litigious situation up here since 1988, and everybody on that island knows every particular piece of litigation that's going on at every given point in time.
Well, I didn't ask whether they knew about it. I asked how they get in your action.
All right. Well, they can intervene at any given point in time. By virtue of testifying at any of the hearings, they become a party and can intervene and participate.
To argue what? That the Board of Trustees either had authority or didn't have authority to revoke the permit? What are they in there to argue?
They can come in and argue any position they want. They have throughout all of these proceedings, Your Honor. And I might point out, in answering fully Justice Pfeiffer's question, the role of the government here, and I think that the role that Crotty and Stromberg and Maynard point out is there is indeed a role that the government plays. In the first instance, let's presume there was good faith on the part of the township trustees in denying our action. We then followed our full legal rights of filing a 2506 appeal. At that point in time, when there was a full adjudication, and I'll overlook for a minute, there was a second adjudication on the issue, but there was a full adjudication on the issue, I respectfully submit.
Here there was?
There was. There was a full adjudication on
the
issue.
That brings me to my second question. I'm troubled by the fact that Judge Franklin said at the outset that this court finds the trustees were without jurisdiction to revoke, and therefore their decision is illegal. And he concludes by saying that being without jurisdiction to act, the trustee's action was and is void. Now, if that decision is void, it doesn't exist. Now, assuming that everything is void, what was left for the court to decide at that point in time?
Your Honor, I think we need to look at the full citing of Judge Franklin. He frames the controversy right in his opinion. He says that the trustee's revocation, I'm quoting, was made on the grounds that the proposed use was commercial and not permitted within the R3 zone. That's his recitation. He also cites...
Whatever the reason, he said it was void.
Well, he also said that the permit was valid. He said that the permit was valid. After full looking at all of the issues presented, and that includes three full pages of brief by Mr. Smith's predecessor, Mr. Jewett, briefing this issue. Three full pages in brief, right before Judge Franklin, saying, this isn't an impertinent docus, this is a commercial marina. We then, in response, did four full pages of briefing, saying that it's a docusage and not an impermissible commercial marina. So the issue was, indeed, completely framed before Judge Franklin, and then he indeed ruled that the cause of the revocation was this issue that it was commercial and not permitted within the R3 zone. He then went on to say, to determine in his own words, that the zoning permit issued to Bay Cliffs Corporation on November 22, 1989 is valid.
This is a 2506 appeal, isn't it? Bay Cliff 1 is a 2506 appeal, isn't it? So, you have to have something to appeal. Having determined that whatever the Board of Trustees did is void, what is left to appeal?
Well, Your Honor, we appealed the full action of the Board of Township Trustees, and then, of course, that was briefed fully by motion before Judge Franklin.
You can't appeal the Board of Trustees because it's void. They didn't have any authority to act, so there's nothing to appeal there, is there?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit there was. I would submit that throughout Judge Franklin's decision, he recites the full scope of the controversy with respect to the argument on commercial usage. This becomes important because what the argument that is really being made here by appellants is a very dangerous one for the state of Ohio. They are urging that what be done is to carve out an exception to res judicata, such that when there is a valid judgment entry on the zoning issue, that it will not have any subsequent effect as res judicata against any action that's brought under 519.24.
Well, we could be more creative in our writing, and we could indicate that in this record, it is not clear to us that Judge Franklin actually decided the merit issue or the issue of whether this is a commercial or a private marina, couldn't we? And then proceed from there and say that, there's no issue of preclusion because we simply can't tell. We have another trial judge, another assigned judge, who comes in and says he didn't decide it. And so we could say under those circumstances, the property owner whose rights, if he can show, they can show that they're specially damaged, and I would guess that a property owner who lives next to a marina, assuming it's a commercial marina, a property owner who lives next to it, if there's damage, is certainly more damaged than somebody who lives at the west end of the island, it seems to me, or at the other end of the island. Wouldn't that be true?
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree with you because not only, as we argue, we have issue preclusion here where the precise same issues were framed, argued, and decided, we also have claim preclusion under agreement. Under both Judge Franklin's case and the case before Judge McQuaid, the exact same facts were in place. The exact same rate meets and bounds, the exact same rate order, the exact same state land lease.
Well, except that Judge Franklin defers to, he says the trustees, at least in the 1980, in his 89, November 22nd opinion, says that the trustees should have deferred to the zoning inspector. Well, that doesn't tell us that Judge Franklin has decided that this is not a commercial marina, does it? It doesn't say that he decided the merit issue that everybody's arguing about for all these years.
Your Honor, I would submit that the full briefing on the issue before Judge Franklin, full briefing on the issue, 7 pages of both sides, devoted to that issue, and then the decision by him that it is, quote, valid, close quote, I would submit that it is a full legal efficacy, which indeed is what the Court of Appeals below found.
The fact that you have a strong argument there, but the fact that it's brief does not mean that the judge got to that issue, does it?
Your Honor, I can't say that he read paragraph A of page 3. I cannot say that. However, with it fully briefed before him, with the issue outlined in his judgment entry saying the issue of commercial use, one has to go with the rational conclusion that he did in fact find that when he in fact found that it was valid. Your Honor, may I have 30 seconds to wrap up?
Yes, just 30 seconds.
Thank you. A carving out of an exception to race judicata to allow for 519-24 actions to apply will be very detrimental, especially in a case such as we are faced with here, where there are very litigious landowners. I can personally envision a situation where every new landowner that comes in could subsequently file another case. That is, of course, the horror to us. We also believe that the legislature, if they had indeed wanted to carve out an exception to race judicata, they could have done so, but instead they gave the four parties under 519.4 the right to bring a cause, again, shared with the public, in addition to any other remedies that they might bring at that time. But that does not suggest also carving out an exception to race judicata. And with that, we would respectfully request an affirmance of the Sixth District Court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Smith, you saved about 40 seconds of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
It's a rare occasion here that anyone saves time.
I hope it's clear we're not asking this court to carve out an exception. We're asking this court to apply race judicata as it always has done, looking at privity, looking at the nature of the claims. Judge Reeves, Justice Piper, I think we're on the right track in terms of the questions. These property owners have not... were not in that fire act. They did not have the opportunity to be in that fire act. It was a very limited fire act where the trial court was acting as an appellate court. And in terms of providing stronger cases where the governmental entity is acting on behalf of all taxpayers, those were coordination cases. When the school district is dissolved and what is not required there, what is not in those cases, in this case, of course, is we have the 519.24 special statute, and we have the proof of the special statute.
What about Mr. Brown's argument that your clients could have intervened in the case in Bay Cliffs 1 or Bay Cliffs 2, and then they could have if they were party, they could have appealed, obviously. Could have appealed the, gotten what they wanted, perhaps.
I disagree that they could have. The intervention is a discretionary trial. And again, you have the limited nature of what Judge Franklin was looking at. Whether intervention would have been proper, certainly. And again, the critical fact to remember is whether they intervened or not. The reasoning on whether, in terms of whether this is a permitted use, I should say, whether this is a commercial use in a residential, was not relevant or necessary or important to Judge Frank, because he was looking just at the one thing: was there a false statement? Didn't these trustees?
Well, but his opinion does give some credence to the statement that he made a decision on the merits, doesn't it? And I mean, why not? Why shouldn't your clients have been there and saved all this trouble for everyone?
The clients were not there. Whether they should have been there, they weren't made parties by the trustees or by Davis. And remember, we're asking, you're being asked to assert race judicata principles against parties that were not there. There's no evidence in the record that they could have been or should have been there, and as I stated, and I hope by the analysis of 25 or 6 action, there were not proper parties to that initial action.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.